As promised earlier in the show, we're going to delve into the discussion in this segment on the issue of baseball, money, and values. I think anyone who's ever gone to a ball game as a kid has dreamt of catching a ball hit off one of baseball's immortals. Most often when you're in the stands, you're going to have to count on a foul tip. If you're out in the bleachers, you might be lucky enough to catch perhaps a winning home run. Home runs have been much in the news of late as a few years back, Mark McGwire finally broke Roger Maris's record, which itself was a rather illustrious breaking of Babe Ruth's 1927 record of 60 home runs. Maris upped it to one more in 1961. McGwire upped it to 70 in 1997. And anyone who was in Northern California probably noted to some degree, even if you're not a fan, that a few years back, Barry Bonds was chasing the record in 2001. On October 5th, to be specific, the most famous record in baseball, that of the home runs per season, was broken indeed by Barry Bonds. Now, joining us today is Mr. Jerry Rose, who was at that game and has a story to tell. So, welcome on board, Mr. Rose.
Good afternoon.
Tell us a bit about yourself. You work in Yolo County.
Yes, I'm the director of the Employment and Social Services Department for Yolo County. It involves all of the aid programs that people are familiar with, as well as a lot of employment programs. We put a lot of people to work and aid a number of industries and in getting employees.
Good. UCD students, take note.
You bet.
You were at this game. Tell us a little bit about what that was like, going to the game where everybody in the stadium must have thought, my God, you know, hey, wouldn't it be neat if he hit it to me?
It was pretty wild. It was there was a lot of electricity in the stadium that night. It was a Dodgers game, which are always pretty fired up. But it was an especially electric night because of the race for the pennant last year. Mm-hmm. The Giants absolutely needed to win that game to have any chance of going into the postseason.
Right.
And on top of that, Bonds was chasing the home run record. So it was quite a wild evening.
Now, of course, I imagine you, as like anyone else going to the stadium, must have thought, you know, I better take a mitt just in case, right?
Yeah, actually, I'd forgotten my mitt at home. And fortunately, my partner, Debbie, went home for lunch, which she rarely does, and called me and asked if she should throw that in. I said, oh, sure, throw it in. And so she did. And so I did take a glove, and along with thousands of other fans that night.
All right, so there's electricity in the air. Barry Bonds has already hit 70. He's tied Mark McGwire. There's a chance here that he might, if he can just get some good wood on the ball, become baseball's all-time home run king. You are ideally positioned out in what, left field?
Actually, it's in right field. I was fortunate enough to get season tickets in the front row of what they call the arcade. And it happens to be right over where Bonds' numbers are kept count for all of his home runs.
So if he's going to hit one out, you're right. There's a chance you'd be in the mix of it.
Got a chance.
Okay. Well, what happened that night? We all know that. Well, I'm not sure which inning it was, but we all know that Bonds had an immortal swing.
Yes, he did.
And you're a witness to it.
I was a witness to it.
So could you tell us what you saw?
Well, actually, it was he came up to bat. Nomo was pitching for the Dodgers, and it was on October 5th. The first pitch was a ball. And it was about that time I was scrambling for cameras and mitts and along with everyone else to, mm-hmm. you know, kind of capture the magic moment on film was right. My thought initially.
Right.
Well, better put the glove on. Never know what could happen. And the next pitch was right down the tubes. And you could tell when it leaves the pitcher's hands, and that's part of Bonds's, I think, success, is that when the ball leaves the pitcher's hands, he pretty much knows what he's going to do. And you can see him in the box wind up to take, you know, a good whack. And he did at the second pitch. And fortunately, it was a night game. And the ball was coming straight out towards us. And it looked like it was going to fall short to begin with. It actually looked like it was kind of a floater. And it wasn't much of a wind. It was pretty still. And it kept coming and coming. And if you ever played ball, you know when the ball looks like it's standing still, it's pretty much coming right at you. And this one was standing still, except it was getting bigger and bigger by the moment. It was about the size of a beach ball.
So all of a sudden you realized that among the fans in the ballpark, you got a shot at catching this illustrious home run.
Had a shot. And, you know, reliving it now, even get goosebumps thinking about it. My first thought was, it's coming this way. My second thought was, don't interfere with it because I am right on the edge. And you see fans sometimes knock a ball back into the field or, you know, something that would disadvantage the home team. And so that was my second thought. And my third thought was, catch it. And I was fortunate enough to be in the right place at the right time. I reached over the railing in front of me and backhanded it on a pretty good stretch. And it was ended up being some people call a snow cone or an ice cream cone. Uh-huh. The ball was sticking partially out of the top of the glove.
You sort of got it just in the web.
I got it just in the web. I remember the moment. I remember the catch. I remember bringing the ball back, looking at it in some disbelief, quite frankly, and holding it up for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started feeling the crowd coming over my back, and that's when I tucked it in.
Uh-huh.
And fortunately, where we were, you know, they were season tickets, so we're surrounded by people that, for the most part, we knew. And so I was fairly well protected, but it took a while for security to get there because it's the deepest part of the park, actually. I'm right above the 421 mark.
Right.
And, you know, it's rare that he would crank one out that far, although he hit one for 491 feet this year.
Unbelievable. Straight out as far as you can hit one and you're there.
As far as you can hit in the park.
So for a moment, you're sitting there in stunned disbelief looking down at the ball. And what are you thinking?
At that moment, yeah, I mean, there was disbelief and joy and, you know, it's one of those moments that you read about or you see in the movies or something, like when the ball is coming at you, everything was quiet. I could not hear a thing when I caught that ball. And for like maybe seconds afterwards, there was just like silence.
Wow.
You know, you catch it, then all of a sudden you hear the roar and realize what happened. I mean, it takes a while for all this to sink in. Uh-huh. And it's, you know, it happens in a matter of seconds, I guess, but it seems like an eternity.
Wow.
And it took a while for security folks to get there because, as I said, it was in the way out in the 421-foot marker. And once they got there, both the league security as well as the Pac Bell Park security whisked both Debbie and I away. And they just, I swear our feet were not touching the ground. People were grabbing at us.
Now, that must have been a bit scary.
It was scary.
Especially in light of what's happened since.
Well, yeah, especially in what's happened. Like, you know, nothing, you know, to that degree has happened before. You know, the controversy and then fans getting beat up over balls and stuff, nothing to the degree that we have now. And so none of that really crossed my mind, quite frankly, of just, I knew I had something pretty valuable. I knew I better keep my hands on it.
Around you, did you have any sense that somebody might lunge and grab the ball in those brief moments? You had some protection around you, you say.
As security was getting us out of there, I wasn't realizing it then, but I think in hindsight, there were two things going on. There were people actually grabbing for the ball and the glove that security was bouncing them back pretty darn good. And there were other folks that were just, you know, wanted to high five or pat you on the back or just touch you. I'm the guy that caught the ball. Kids still come up and want to take pictures even this year. You know, they know I'm the guy and they want to shake hands and take pictures and stuff. It's pretty big event.
The AP photographer took a first class shot of you and Debbie in the stands there. I mean, and I must say, you are certainly beaming in that photograph, looking like one happy guy.
I sure was. And it was from that point forward, what they did is they got us under the stadium. And the league officials came in, and the ball had some physical marks on it.
Yeah, how do they know?
There's actually physical marks on it. There's a number 4 and a number 2 actually stamped on the ball that I have. Then there's also a ultraviolet marking on it. And so they brought in a light and held it on it and verified. I don't know what that marking was, though. They kind of covered the light, and I've never held it under a light myself to see what that actual marking is yet. But once they did that, then they took a little hologram button and stuck it right on the sweet spot of the ball and stuck the ball in an acrylic cube and handed it back to me.
Wow.
That was it. It was verified. All the time I was watching TV, while I was down there, he actually hit number 72, which a fan bobbled and dropped back on the field. So Barry's got that one. Then, you know, the league took us and resat us in another set of seats so we wouldn't be bothered,
right,
and offered to lock up the ball. And we decided that, you know, we'd try and just cover for it. And so we held on to the ball, told everyone that the ball was locked up, but we had it with us all the time.
Every kid, I think, dreams of doing what you did. And there you are, part of baseball history now. And then the part about this story that I think is in some ways the most interesting, the weirdness sets in. I mean, the next guy that catches number 73, which is within the record ball, I guess you say number 72 bounces back on the field. 73 is actually today's Chronicle. In the courts between a man named Popoff and a man, Alex Popoff and Patrick Hayashi. Apparently, according to videotapes, the ball comes in. It looks like Popoff's got it. There's a mad fight. People are being slammed around. And out of the crowd emerges Mr. Hayashi with the ball. So who has claim on the ball? Lawyers are getting involved. Harvard lawyers, law professors are getting involved in this story. According to the Chronicle, Mr. Hayashi quit his job at Cisco because of the distractions involved in all of this. He's waiting for the case to be resolved. They're going to go to a mediator. The guy that caught number 600, apparently there's a controversy of he went with friends. He said, if I catch the ball, we'll split it. He catches the ball and decides there's no sense having to honor his verbal agreement. He caught the ball. Possession's 9/10 of the law. That one's going to court. Holy mackerel. Mm-hmm. So you managed to dodge all of that.
Yeah. You know, at this point, I believe I have the only uncontested record ball out there. But I'm holding on to it. You know, it's so bizarre to see, you know, what's occurred here. That, you know, there's always been, you know, people try and catch a ball, it bounces off the glove, or they catch it barehanded or try to, and it drops in the stands. There's a bit of a, you know, a scramble for it, and somebody picks it up. You know, the sight of both on the 600 ball and on the 73 ball, just out and out fight.
Thuggery.
Thuggery. Just, you know, you see people slugging one another and just, you know, just literally, really, you know, trying to beat the ball away from someone. And that's just wrong. Something needs to be done about that. And I'm not sure what the judge or the mediators will do in this, but there needs to be some thought given to when there's a record ball or there's a record event coming up, that there's some announcement that the ball belongs to the Hall of Fame and that whoever gets it, you know, gets a glove or something from the player. But,
yeah.
You know, to have this kind of somebody's going to get killed.
You think of things like, you know, Mark Twain, the man who corrupted Hadleyburg, or these stories about the pearl, I guess Steinbeck, about what it'll do, the thought of like having an item that might have a great deal of value, mm-hmm, how it can just ruin people's lives.
Exactly. You know, it doesn't really take that much. You know, some of these balls, I mean, it's a matter of, you know, your own vantage point about how much is how much. But some of these things were, you know, 73 and the 600 ball obviously are probably worth a bit more. But, you know, the number 70 ball, the tying ball, went for 50 grand. And, I mean, people are willing to, you know, practically kill one another for
right,
that amount of money.
I mean,
betraying
your friends. I mean, having family fights. I mean, it's just, what a horrible spectacle.
It's very bizarre.
It's a very compelling story. And to your credit, you laughed at it every inch of the way and said, you know, whatever that ball's worth, it's more than I brought to the stadium that day, which is, God knows, the proper attitude.
Yeah, and rooting for the team. I mean, I went back to the stands that night and tried to root the Giants onto a victory. It didn't work that year, but I think we're going to bring one home this year.
Yeah, but as we speak, Giants have won first round against the Atlanta Braves, and they go, I guess, what, to St. Louis now?
Yes, they do.
Jerry, what became of this ball?
The ball is locked away safely and along with the glove,
mm-hmm,
and I'm kind of sitting back watching things. Barry's career certainly has, I think, many more legacies in front of him.
Yeah. I mean, he might hit 700. Who knows? Who knows if he can catch Ruth or Aaron?
He might catch Ruth or Aaron. I'm pretty confident he's going to break 700, and we'll just see what happens.
So it's a great, great little long-term investment, and whenever you get is more than you took to the ballpark that day.
There you go.
Outstanding. And I'm sure you're doing a lot better than people that having Charles Schwab accounts.
Yes. And no scars like some of these other folks.
Jerry Rose, thank you very much for telling us your most interesting story. And you're going back out there. You've got a shot at catching more of these.
You never know. There's actually been 3 home runs hit to the seats right where I am in the arcade. So
your little peer group out there is continuing to catch balls.
Yeah, in the deepest part of the park. Who would think?
Well, good luck on catching. It would be number 756.
Hey. What,
is it Aaron at 755?
That would do it.
Hey, well, I'm pulling for you.
Yeah, maybe you'll be there.
Maybe so. You have invited me, and I keep declining. But, boy, I think I may have to want to be there for that one.
Yes.
And if I catch it, I'm splitting it with you.
Yeah, right.
All right, looks like we're about out of time, unfortunately, as it all goes by too quickly. Our thanks today to guests Steve Valentino, Stuart Gardner, and Jerry Rose. We'll see you again next week, Thursdays at 5 o'clock here on KDVS 90.3. You've been listening to Radio Parallax. And stay tuned. Now, this is, of course, the end of our public affairs broadcasting for this afternoon. We resume our musical programming with, first of all, Electricity and Lust with Gina, which puts us at a bit of a disadvantage because I'm never quite sure how to segue from our program into the very eclectic musical selections you'll be entertained with for the next 2 hours. But let's try this one. Relative to Jerry Rose and our wish that he can profit handsomely from his lucky experience down at Pac Bell Park.